morning. Thank you for applying to be a regent. Thank you to your interest. We'll spend the next 45 minutes or so together, and I will ask you that as you talk, please talk into the microphone for the benefit of the record. And so the rest, sometimes so all of us can hear. We'll ask a series of questions. These questions are somewhat random, and they're not necessarily rehearsed, but they'll flow out of the conversation that we'll have. So I would ask that you would share an opening statement with us if you have one prepared. And then as we get towards the end of the questioning period, I will try to give you notice that we're nearing the end. And then we'll ask for a closing statement at the end as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to meet all of you. I know many of you by reputation, so it's fun to put faces to names. As I'm sure the papers in front of you say, my name is Courtney. I am a JD MBA student at the U. This is my second of 4 years in the program. Prior to coming here, I am a 2011 graduate from Gustavus Adolphus College down in St. Peter. I know we have some alumni in the room. That's fun for me. At Gustavus, which is where my interest in this position really began, I served on our student senate as the chair of student and academic affairs. I did that for a variety of reasons, one of which was I was one of few students that could communicate effectively both with the students and with the faculty and administration. I graduated in a time when we had three very distinct groups. We had the faculty, we had the administration, and the students. And to today, unfortunately, they still don't communicate that well. So my job was to facilitate that communication, to keep that conversation going, and to enhance understanding, which is what my interest in this position is. You'll notice in my answers today, most of them are going to revolve around communication and transparency, and I think those are the most important elements of a higher education administration. So that's my interest there. In the Student Senate position and other positions at the school, I worked with the different student groups. I worked with the different faculty groups that corresponded to those student groups, and I kept the conversation going between them. I was asked to speak about my financial experience outside of my MBA. We did have a $500,000 budget that we allocated every year, so I know those numbers are a lot smaller than they are here at the U, but it was a big number for a small school. And outside of that, I know a lot of the answers today are also going to be about tuition and fiduciary duties, and my experience there is with Wells Fargo Bank. I think that was in my application. I did work in the student loan department for 4 years, so I have a lot of experience with students in debt, which is not something anyone should have a lot of experience with. My involvement at the university is growing every day. Right now, I am both a student at the law school and at the Carlson School of Management, so I try to stay active in both. At the law school, we have a musical. I don't know if any of you have been there, but I'm the costume director for the musical, so we try to keep things fun. Law school can be very daunting, so we do that. I'm also a research assistant for a professor there in the Corporate Institute, which keeps me involved with the faculty as well. At Carlson, I'm a little more active this year. The program we designate between a law year and a business year, and then it goes by a semester. This is my business year, so I spend most of my time at Carlson this year. And in that capacity, I am an admissions ambassador. I get to deal with prospective students, which gives me great insight into what they're considering. Of course, it goes beyond money and beyond the funding of an education. There's other things that they're worried about, and so it's nice to get to have that conversation and to share why I chose Carlson and the University of Minnesota as well. And the other side of things at Carlson, I work in the Career Center, so I get to deal with students once they've left the school. So I'm a current student, I deal with the ones coming in, and the ones that have already left, which is kind of a fun, holistic view for me to get. I also am a West Bank ambassador. It's a new program that we've started this year. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we work with the students on the West Bank of the campus and try to get them involved in the greater community. There's a lot of great businesses on the West Bank, and they don't get a lot of patronage from the campus. If students are going to go somewhere, they migrate across the river, and we're trying to solve that, both for the benefit of the students and for the businesses. So that's where my community involvement is. As far as being on the Board of Regents, what excites me about it is the opportunity for a student to be there and a student voice to be heard. That's not something that was ever even an idea that was tolerated at my undergraduate mm-hmm. institution, so I'm excited that students at least get to speak, and I would hope that we're heard as well. So I think that's a lot of fun. I guess there will be specific questions that we'll get more into those experiences, so I'll just wait for us.
One of the questions that came up during a discussion that we had earlier this morning was some work that you did in St. Peter with busing in St. Peter.
Yeah.
And we alluded to it out in the hallway. Could you just briefly describe what you did? And first, one of the questions that came up is, where do you bus in St. Peter? I mean, from where to where? Mm-hmm. And so those of us that are somewhat familiar with St. Peter know that. And then also the skill sets that went into that busing. I mean, it sounds like quite an undertaking.
It was an undertaking I did not anticipate when I undertook it, but I did enjoy it. So what Gustavus does, there's a St. Peter public transit system. It tends to be for the older generation in St. Peter. There's stops designated around the town. If any of you have been there, it's a little blip on the map, but it's convenient for people, especially in the harsh winters. What Gustavus does and has done for decades is they will contract with the busing system for the weekend nights, so Friday and Saturday nights, and then other special events, so for example, Election Day or St. Patrick's Day, or days when students are migrating in great numbers off of the campus. And what the purpose is to keep them safe and to kind of keep an eye on them to know where they are. It's no secret that undergraduates like to have a nice time on Fridays and Saturdays, and that's what we're trying to facilitate there, is with the students that are going to the houses or the drinking places, trying to get them to those places safely, and more importantly, to get them home from those places safely. And what we were doing when I came into the position, it's something completely funded by the Student Senate, and that fell under my purview as the Chair of Student and Academic Affairs. What we were doing when I came into the position was we had a bus that you would call the number, and from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m., the bus would hit every phone number that called in the order that they called in. I did not personally think that that worked well. You had students waiting 45 minutes to an hour, and those students had the patience of 19-year-olds, and then they got in cars, and they were driving, so I didn't think that was ideal. What I did, and I didn't think it would be as much as it was when I first did it, I turned it into a bus route system. So it worked much like a Minneapolis transit system would work. We had certain stops that it hit at certain times, and you had to ride it around. I got a lot of value out of this that I didn't anticipate, one of which was great communication from the students. They were all, nearly all 2,400 of them were very unhappy with what I did. So my inbox was, I got great at crafting emails, and I became very articulate. So that was a good experience. I turned it into a trial system. We did it for 6 weeks. And at that point, I did a lot of surveying and a lot of talking with different student groups, and it turned out that that wasn't the right answer. And we did end up reverting back to the original system. I think something that we all learned was you don't know that you hate it until you try it. And so we tried it, and we hated it, and then we moved on. So that's we are busing from campus to the bars, and we do it on Fridays and Saturdays, to be blunt. Yeah.
Yes, Paul.
Courtney, you mentioned the importance of a student voice on the Board of Regents. Mm-hmm. The University of Minnesota has had a program for more than 40 years that's providing a voice from students to the Board of Regents by serving on standing committees, making biannual reports to the regents, and more than that. How should the student regent work with those student representatives to the Board of Regents? And how does it work today, and how would you see it improving, if you will, if you were to become the student regent?
I think that the existing structures provide a lot of value. But beyond that, I think there's value in a title. I would assume that the Board of Regents hears what the students are saying through these groups and these communication channels and does put a lot of value in what they're saying and take it to heart. But I think that it could be stronger if the student representative on the board presented those ideas as well. I see that just as a hierarchical thing, different levels. I think a regent is going to listen to a regent a little bit differently than a regent's going to listen to somebody who's a student that speaks to the regents. I think that it works very well right now. I would envision, to be entirely honest, I don't know exactly how those communication channels look. That's not something I've been able to find. But I would envision it being more of a back and forth. As I said, I'm interested in communication. So instead of having the students present ideas to the board and then the board discusses it among themselves, I would be excited to see students remaining in the conversation throughout the decision process. If that is how it is now, I would like to continue that. And if it's not, I'd like to institute it.
Thank you.
That answers your question?
Erdell?
I liked your comment or the terminology of international and domestic diversity, the two. Could you talk a little bit more about that and the broader definition of diversity? And you said that there is something about carefully crafted recruitment, you said. How would you go about that?
This is actually something that's come out of Carlson this year. As students, we've had a different experience with the diversity initiative than I think the administration had intended for us to have. They looked at diversity and they saw we need to reach out to more international students. So 33% of my class right now is an international demographic. Beyond that, there is one student that would be considered a diverse student who is from domestic area. Working with some people at Carlson, we've been trying to get more of maybe it's racial diversity, more African-American students from inner cities that want to be interested in this degree, in this program. Maybe it's educational diversity, more first-time graduates coming into the program. So what I see happening, whether this is true or not, in practice, it looks like diversity means we go abroad, and it means we bring in international students, and I think that's fantastic. I've learned so much from my international peers. But I think that there's a lot of domestic diversity that could be reached out to as well. And I'd like to see programs that are more tailored to maybe it's inner city, maybe it's rural, maybe it's racial diversity or educational diversity or something like that. I just noticed a lot of similarities between me and my peers, and I'd like to see more differences.
Thank you.
David.
Thank you. Courtney, we were looking at your resume or your application, and one of the things that that we're very keen on, and I think the Board of Regents is keen on too, is making sure that people are being recruited to the Board of Regents with governing board experience. And that is working on boards or in committees where decisions are made as collective, that is by the group as a whole, and working with management to promote the organization. You haven't listed too many of those types of experiences in your resume, and so what I'd like to do is give you an opportunity to explain what you think the role of a sitting board and board member may be when you have that type of experience in your background.
Nope, it is pretty thin, my experience. I'm young. I'm close to being out of undergrad, so I don't have a lot of that opportunity behind me. Primarily, it is what I listed in my application. It was through the student governing boards at Kasavis. I think I learned invaluable experiences there. What I did learn is the value of careful articulation and a voice. We had the tendency as a bunch of 20 to 22-year-olds to shout and say unkind things and just garner support in the most dramatic of ways, and I saw that that was not a functional way to operate a board. So as leadership changed over the years that I served on that board, then the new leaders that came in my senior year were much more open communication, but you can only communicate if you're well articulated. And it was, you don't come in here with an idea unless you've already developed the idea elsewhere. And what I saw there was a lot of more productivity and a lot more collaboration, and we were able to support each other's ideas because they were well thought out ideas and they had already been developed. So when you're developing a well-developed idea, it's only going to get much better. To answer your question as far as what I see a board doing, specifically the Board of Regents, I see different perspectives. And I see the value in individual members being the ability to communicate and put together one cohesive idea, one cohesive perspective. And that's something that I would like to be a part of. And I think as a student, that's where my perspective would come in and would enhance the policies and ideas coming out of the Board of Regents.
Thank you very much.
Jerry?
In your application, you mentioned that you feel that you have a perspective on the expectations of the students at the university. Fill me in a little bit more about what are those expectations as you see them of students at the university?
Sure. I see shifting every year. It shifts, and as to be expected, the focus of any higher education institution or higher education in general, students come in with a certain expectation of quality. And I don't know that that's always well translated or well received by the administration enforcing that quality. So, for example, in Carlson, I see students coming in expecting to be taught these great lessons and these big ideas and how to implement them. And for the most part, we are. But then you have experiences where there may be a faculty instructor or an administrator that doesn't match up with that. I can think of one experience that I had last semester. I had an instructor who was there purely because she does incredible research. She had no idea how to communicate with students. She does wonderful things for this research-based institution. And from the administrative perspective, I can see that she would be invaluable. But to students, she was confusing and crass and unkind and unforgiving, and it was difficult for us to learn from that perspective. So I think if there was a way to communicate that ahead of time, had there been, you know, practice classes or a trial period or something like that, maybe we would have been able to weed that out and find an individual who was both great at research, as someone should be at this school, and as well as great as translating that research and the knowledge to students.
Follow up, if I could. Sure. You had that experience, mm-hmm. and finish the story for me.
We had that experience. And we actually have a student board within Carlson alone. They call it the MBAA board. It's the Association of Students. There's a representative out of every class, and we got together. There were about six of us that got together with our individual representative, and we created a plan. It was an accounting class is what it was. And so we created a plan we have this professor. The professor is here for a contracted period of time. There's nothing we as students can do about that, nor should we. Maybe we were just angry we got bad grades. We don't know. So what we did was we created a new class, and we got together with the professor and redesigned the course. So instead of being a 7-week course, it's now a 10-week course for next year's incoming students. It'll be a 10-week course. It'll be taught with tutors instituted in the class. So if you're not communicating well with the professor, we have tutors that are willing to try and readdress those issues with you.
So that same professor is engaging in that new round of teaching model. All right.
Yes.
Jim.
Courtney, thank you for volunteering your service and on top of what is already, I'm sure, a daunting schedule. Tell us how you came to apply, what your thought process was, how you heard about it, or whether you were recruited. And then you still have a slot open on your reference list. Is there someone at the Carlson School that, if we wanted to, we should talk to, please?
Sure. I'll start with the reference. There are several. You're looking more for my volunteer experiences, I would suggest people in the admissions office, namely Jen Furman would be able to give me a reference. Also Maggie Thomas in the Career Center. I work with her on my Career Center project. If you're looking for a professor, Axe Zahir, Dean Zahir's husband, would be willing to do that as well. First part of your question.
How did you come to decide to apply and what the process was?
Thank you. It was in an email that I conveniently deleted because I do that with a lot of emails. And I actually had a peer approach me and suggest. He was interested in this position. He does not anticipate being here after graduation. He's one of my MBA peers. And so he suggested that I would be somebody who he thought would serve him as a student well in that position. So then I took it upon myself to apply, and I met with David to make sure that I had the right idea of what the Board of Regents was and that I knew what I was getting into, and I was very happy with what I heard.
Thank you.
Sorry, Joanne.
Jennifer, I want to go back to your response when you were talking about kind of domestic versus international issue of looking at diversity. And it seemed like there was a lot of discussion, or you said you wanted to gather more information about that. Based on some of that information that you gathered, and if you were selected to be seated as a regent, is there something that you might want to bring forward as a result of that discussion? And the university's goal at 30%, although we're talking about domestic representation and creating those opportunities for students that are residents of the state of Minnesota.
Sure. If I'm understanding the question correctly, what my suggestions would be for enhancing domestic diversity?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that a lot of it is getting the word out. I think we're a very strong regional school. I'm from a small town in South Dakota. It was never a question. If I wanted to go to the best school in the area, I was going to go to the University of Minnesota for law, business, whatever the degree might have been. And that's what I did. I think once you move out of that area, it becomes a little bit more difficult to get the university's name on a map. I mean, just read a few articles. We are reading about UCLA, Michigan, Virginia. Minnesota doesn't necessarily come up. And I think that's a function of a lot of different issues that could be addressed over a very long period of time. And one way to do that, one way to get the name into the conversation, I think, would my MBA at play here would be maybe a stronger marketing campaign targeted at certain students, certain demographics.
But were there any questions about the goals or the strategies at the school of setting 30% for international students? Was that ever part of the conversation about why that policy, what was behind those decisions?
No, it was. We never questioned that. My peers and I have never questioned the numbers that they are. We just questioned how they were being practiced.
Jennifer.
Yeah, Courtney, I know you, because of your MBA background, you understand this is a huge financial institution and the complexity with that. What are your thoughts about recent articles that kind of say, well, part of it is that we're spending so much on administrative costs and then on the burden this falls on students and tuition? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts around that?
I actually really enjoyed reading those articles. I thought they were a great perspective. Biased or not, I'm sure President Kaler would have some more opinions to say about that.
Yes, he does.
I liked the one that he emailed out, though. That was good. My thoughts on that is that it's not a new issue, and I like that it's being addressed now. I listened to an NPR recording of President Brunickens, and that was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And someone had asked a very similar question about administrative costs, and he just brushed it off and just said, no, that's not where the money is going, that's not the problem. And now here we are 5 to 6 years later, and suddenly it is the problem. I think that's an interesting way to look at it. And I, with the information I was provided, thank you to the Wall Street Journal, I think it looks like a serious issue, and maybe that is something that should be considered is the administrative costs. As far as tuition, I pay it, and I think it would be great if it was lower. But I don't think that's practical in a state where funding is being cut left and right for everything, including higher education, and in an atmosphere where costs just go up in America. That's just what they do. So I think it's important to talk about the actual number that tuition is, and I think it needs to be manageable for students, but I think more than that, the quality that they're getting for that is something else that should be brought into the discussion. $13,000 a year, it's a big number. It's not as daunting of a number when you're getting this $13,000 education, and I think that we need to make sure that they remain in balance.
Just a follow-up on that. So now, because you do, you know, case study methods from an MBA class,
yes.
You're about to enter a regent meeting with some people who have way more financial experience. How do you prep for that conversation, for that meeting?
A lot of questions, a lot of approaching, if I can approach anyone before the meeting. I'd love to come in well-informed. I don't enjoy being surprised very often. With information, at the very least, I would be a lifetime student if I could. I love learning and gathering information and piecing it together. And so I would be interested in getting as much as I could ahead of time. That being said, I also have the law degree behind me, which has taught me to look at every perspective of different issues. So coming into a meeting, knowing myself, I would come in with several different ideas and options, and as I get information from those people in that meeting, I would plug them in, and that would help me narrow down what my end result would be.
Lois.
You referenced working at the law school with the corporate institute.
Mm-hmm.
would you please, in a two-part way, tell us about what the Corporate Institute is, and then draw upon your Carlson business career experience, that Corporate Institute, and what you know about life to discuss the university business world relationship.
Sure. The first part, I hope David is okay with my answer, as being in the Corporate Institute himself. It's where the business law happens. That's where our negotiation team comes out of. That's where different studies come out of. That's where our different clinics come from. We have a corporate law clinic that happens there. And I work specifically under Professor Mary Alden, although she doesn't enjoy being called professor. She teaches out of the Corporate Institute. And so I just do individual tasks for her, whatever can enhance. So, for instance, right now I'm putting together a database of all the JD MBA graduates of the U. There is no such database right now. So I have the fun task of tracking them all down through LinkedIn and other resources, wow, trying to figure out where they are. It's great for me, great context. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying doing that right now. And then the projects, just as they come up, are tossed my way, and that's what I work with.
Okay.
The connection to the business world is actually a question I was hoping I would get. I think Carlson, one of the strongest things Carlson does is networks with the area businesses. It is incredible how I could walk into Target headquarters or 3M or Ecolab or anywhere in the Twin Cities, even in greater Minnesota in the area, and say, I'm from Carlson, I'm a Carlson student, or I go to the U. I'm like, oh, awesome, let's talk. Like, let's have that conversation, because they went to the U too. And I think that is a great conversation, and they've done a great job of fostering that. I'd be really interested to see other colleges on the campus doing the same thing. I think there's a strong sense of community that could be tapped into, and I haven't seen it tapped in that way yet, and I would really like to see that. My experience is limited to the law school, but I would love to see a much stronger alumni network there, which is part of what I'm trying to do with this database I'm creating. I would love to see that, and I would love to see the U reaching out. I think that goes back to when I'm talking about the quality of the education we're getting for our tuition dollars. If you can promise that I've got a 90% shot at getting a job, I'll pay you whatever you want me to pay you for tuition, because I'm going to have a job when it's done. That's something that Carlson does, and I think that's something that the U as a whole could look into doing as well.
Ardell?
You mentioned you have some association with the arts in the theater. If it weren't for the priority of this meeting, I would be at the Minnesota State Arts Board meeting right now. But high schools tend to be dropping the arts in school. And from your perspective, both as a student and then as a regent, how do you see the value of the arts in its totality, you know, whether it's music, drama, whatever, both as in student life and professionally?
I think it's invaluable is the short answer. I was, because Avis is a liberal arts school, I would not have chosen to take a theater class, and I was gently encouraged to do so. And I think that my public speaking skills grew immensely because of it. I have zero interest in reading music, but I learned a lot about different sounds and different communication techniques by taking a music course. Is that necessarily true for everyone? No, of course not. I do not think all economics majors should take 6 music classes unless they want to. But I think that getting the arts in there somehow, getting those skills in there somehow, is only going to encourage more communication. And it enhances the student as a member of society, to be completely frank, to go out into the world with nothing but however many credits of economics classes. Maybe you can't talk to people well. Maybe you can't look at a problem from different perspectives or holistically. And I think that that's something that the arts gets into. And I would like to see more of that at public schools.
Thank you.
Sure.
Ms. West, I have a hard time even comprehending taking a law degree and an MA at the same time. I But you're applying also for a regent at the same time as that. And I had a friend, he isn't with us anymore, but he was a judge in the Eighth Circuit Court, and he was a former regent, and he could speed read. He had the ability to look at a page and within a couple of seconds read the whole thing, and he told me when I applied that you'll be swamped with paperwork. And what we see is that it looks like it's 40 hours a week of at least reading, dedication to being a regent.
It is 40 hours a week.
Am I wrong with something? At any rate, he told me you'll be swamped with paperwork. Are you aware of the amount and willing to, I guess you are willing, but I just want you ask you. You've already got those jobs, that school, and you're applying for this. Please, give me your take on that.
Sure. No, I appreciate you double-checking, and I'm still committed to this. As I sit here, I understand the undertaking that it could be. It could be greater. It could be less than what I was told at any given time, and I understand that. I think I have a good grasp on that. To be quite frank, I enjoy being busy. I choose my extracurriculars and my schooling and my tasks as things that I enjoy doing, and therefore they feel like less like work in the truest sense. I only sign up for things that I think I will like to dedicate myself to, and this is included in that list. I have no problem reading 40 hours. I think a month is what it's going to end up being. More or less is completely fine with me because it's something that I'm interested in reading. Now, if you want to have me read a biology book for 40 hours a month, I think I would enjoy that less. But this is something that I'd like to do.
You're almost halfway through a four-year program that's combining two very challenging and complex disciplines, business and law. So as you're almost halfway through it, how are you viewing the program today in terms of did you make the right decision for your advanced degrees? Are there things that you've observed that you might recommend that the program should change? If that were the case, how might you go about it while you're still in it?
Mm-hmm. I made the best decision I could have made for myself, and I'm happy that I made it every single day. I love that I have the opportunity to pursue both of these degrees, and I think that they complement each other very well, as I'm sure any dual degree student would tell you about their degrees. Depending on where you want to be in life, there are different skill sets that you need. The law school gives me a very valuable skill set in the ability to speed read and the ability to understand great issues and to dispense of irrelevant information when presented with a lot of facts and figures. It's taught me how to answer questions succinctly and comprehensively. Then I get over to the business school where everything is a lot more experiential. Everything the law school is for being theoretical, the business school is experiential. They shove us into case competitions and they shove us into interviewing and networking and projects and extracurriculars. So I'm able to take what I learn in one place and how to think, and then I learn how to do in another. And that's what I personally am getting out of this program. I think the law school is currently in an initiative that's trying to bring the experiential in, so those students that are not dual degree students, 5 of 245 that are JD MBAs right now, and those in my class. And so what they're getting, the law school is trying to give the other 240-some, is the clinics and the moot courts and the journals and getting people interacting with the actual legal world. I see the same thing at Carlson with trying to pull in more of the theoretical, and I think that those initiatives are going to continue as they see the value that we're getting out of them.
Well, I'm going to change my question. I had a different question, but, in reaction to your comment about the MBA students in the database, is that a shadow database that's being held within the college, or do you do a wash in the morning and the evening on the central database that's run by the Foundation and Alumni Association?
Right now, it's being held on my laptop. and that's the only place that it is. What I've had to do, until very recently, communication between the two schools was not as strong as it is right now. And so I've gone back through all of the commencement bulletins for both schools, and I've just cross-compared the names and names that appear in both within the period of time to reflect that they received both their JD and their MBA. And then I'm just using the internet quite a bit to find these people in the world, and then I reach out to them with, is this true? Were you a JD MBA graduate? What year was that in? I plug all of that in my database, and then I get their contact information as well. Okay. So right now it's personally mine and the corporate institute. And when it's complete, I plan on giving it to everybody who's been helpful. So the registrar's office of both schools, I mean, anybody that could find it valuable is welcome to have it once it's done. It's not yet done.
I thought I'd just offer a comment. This project, by the way, is something that Courtney came up with all on her own. Mm-hmm. So it is an initiative that is a labor of love.
Okay. Absolutely. Kathy?
Sure. I just had a question. Post-graduation, you should be done in 2 years, and then you'll have 4 more years left. And being a law graduate myself, I know that my days in law school seemed busy, but they weren't as busy as when I was in private practice. So I'm just curious, long term, what are your plans? Are you going to be staying in Minnesota? And how will you be able to juggle a practice and being a regent?
Sure. I do plan to stay in Minnesota in the area. I'm very happy with my experience here. And there are opportunities available to me here that are not available back home in my town of Worth. So I enjoy being in this relation to my family and my background, but the opportunities in the Twin Cities area. I hope my dream job, which I get asked a lot, is corporate negotiation strategy. So not necessarily private practice in that sense. I don't want to be a litigator, to be quite frank. I'm very interested in alternative dispute resolution. So that takes me down the legal path, so be it. If that takes me down the corporate path, so be it. So my workload would look a little bit different than what you're envisioning, I would think. Even if it doesn't, I've always, as I was answering George's question, I've always been busy, and I enjoy that. And I'd like to stay here and continue to be involved at the university. That's given me a lot more than I thought it would give me.
Harriet, do you have?
Sure. I want to go back to something you said a little bit ago about being able to walk into organizations and have that immediate connection with someone because they, too, have graduated or have an affiliation with the university. We still have a large number of Fortune 500 companies and other companies where that is not the case. In your opinion, what role should the Board of Regents play in trying to change that? And what should they do?
I think, speaking from personal experience, so I can think of 20 Fortune 500 companies in the Twin Cities. It's either 20 or 21 right now. And I have reached out to many of them for personal reasons, trying to get a summer internship or what the case may be. I've had a lot of difficulty at a few. One, although it's a private company, is Cargill. Mm-hmm. They do not respond super kindly to Carlson graduates for whatever reason that might be. And that's a difficult hurdle for a student to personally overcome on an individual level. The administration of Carlson has tried to do a little bit of helping. There's only so much that they can do. So what I would like to see from the top of the top, which is the Board of Regents, is more communication on the value that the university is giving to the students and preparing the students better to be productive members of that company. So I did a little personal digging, and I know one of the reasons Cargill isn't happy with Carlson is we sent them a few grads that were not well qualified for the position, and they presented themselves as though they were. So they got in there, and they didn't contribute to the company. And so they thought that was indicative of Carlson as a whole. That's not the case. And so I think to go all the way up to the Board of Regents, if there's some sort of communication mechanism, some sort of visual that they can give them to prove that this is true of the university as a whole, I think that that would be a very well appreciated effort by students.
Thank you.
Sonia.
Good morning. I would like you to think about the possibility that you become a regent and you are able to fulfill your 6 years and then you look back. There are no right answers to this, but I'd just like you to take a moment to think, how will you evaluate, or how might you evaluate your service and your contributions to the university at the end of the 6 years?
It's a great question. The first thing that comes to mind is I don't ever want to be speaking to an individual, whether it's a student, an administrator, or a faculty member at the U, that says, I didn't know. I want them to know everything that they felt they needed to know to make the decisions they had to make. So that gets back to my personal infatuation with transparency and communication. And had I done my job appropriately, there shouldn't be anyone saying, well, I didn't know that, or why did that happen? Because I should have already communicated that to them. And I think that would be, that's the first evaluation that comes to mind. Of course, there will be deliverables as well that I would hope to be proud of if I had done my job appropriately, but I think that's the strongest thing for me.
Thank you.
Courtney, Margaret?
A follow-up on Cargill, because Regent David Larson is from Cargill, and he serves on the board of directors. And if that impression that you shared was shared with him, would he say that's true for Cargill, or is that a personal assessment that you have of Cargill, or is that a widely held view of Cargill at the Carlson School of Management?
In my experience, it is a view of Carlson. It was not something I came up with on my own. I tried to pursue an opportunity there, and the Career Center helped me understand the situation. From Cargill's perspective, maybe that's not it. I would assume their perspective is we're trying to pursue better-ranked schools because they're Cargill and they can. They're such an impressive company in the private sector that they can go to Wharton or they can go to Indiana and pursue those schools. Maybe they just don't want to deal with Carlson graduates. So it could be for a different reason, but the perspective I get is Carlson's.
Okay, I was just trying to clarify if it was a personal perspective of yours or held by some entity within the Carlson School, and your answer is it's the Career Center.
Yes, it is.
We are nearing the time of the end. Shelley has a question.
Just real quick. Yeah. You seem to have a lot of strengths. What would be some of your weaknesses that you see you have?
I don't love public speaking, which makes today a lot of fun for me. I have, as the discussion of liberal arts came up, I've tried to remedy that by throwing myself into things. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it's a crash and burn situation. That's my go-to answer for my weakest point is I don't enjoy public speaking quite often. I would say there's always areas to improve. As the last year and a half has taught me, getting a better grasp of ideas. I came into law school with, I am such a thinker, and I'm so smart, and I know the ideas of everything, and boy, was I put in my place. And every single day, I have this opportunity to be surrounded by people that are very gifted thinkers in different ways. So to be able to pull from them every day and adjust the way that I think is a growing opportunity that I constantly and probably always will.
Before we go to closing statements, just to follow up on that, what do you do to keep your world big when you're as busy as you are? What do you connect with? What do you use to provide that link to the outside world?
A lot of what I do, I try to get involved in organizations that have the link to the outside world. Outside world being anything that's not in the EU. So my West Bank ambassadorship and things like that getting involved. I also make sure that my close group of friends are involved in some activities as myself, and then we just sort of shift. We have a gradual shift from doing the activity to getting back into our social life and doing things like that. So we try to stay involved in that way.
At this point, I would like to invite you to make a closing statement, but maybe as part of or before your closing statement, as a gifted critical thinker, Is there a question that you thought we should have asked? And so I'll offer that as maybe part of your closing statement as well.
Sure. A question you should have asked.
Or maybe that you expected.
But you expected
right.
Us. Yeah.
And
if that's fine if you didn't.
No, I hope that I answered it elsewhere in my questions. But I was expecting maybe more of an explicit question about how I'm going to be both a student that is, victim is the only word that comes to mind, but it's completely inappropriate, that is subject to the decisions of the Board of Regents and the university as a whole, and then how I also am on that board. I think that's a delicate balance that I've given a lot of thought to over the past couple of weeks, and I'm not sure that I have a clear-cut answer. But I look forward to the opportunity of having to balance those. There was a question in the application about conflict of interest. And my immediate answer was, well, absolutely not. Like, of course not, no conflicts of interest. But how do I pay tuition and decide what tuition may be? How do I follow the president and listen and do what the president wants me to do? Things like that. So I can only imagine that that's complicated and a delicate line to follow. I'm excited for the opportunity to try to do that. I guess the only question I would have expected, and I guess I'm glad you didn't ask, would have been how I planned on balancing that act, because to be entirely honest, I don't know until I'm in there and trying to do it.
You answered it very well. So.
For closing statements, I'm confident that I gave you the idea that I wanted to get across. I'm surprisingly passionate about the University of Minnesota. I'd be lying if I said I thought that's how it would be when I came in. I was a Gustie through and through, and I still am, but I thought that's where my allegiances were going to lie. And to get here and have the public university experience be so much more than I thought it was going to be has been a pleasant surprise day in and day out, and I would love to be a part of that system from a different viewpoint if given the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Mr. Chair, would you make sure that David gets the additional reference names and who to contact if we want to follow up with the Carlson School people?
Absolutely.
So, thank you.
Before we disperse for a quick break here, we also have another guest in the gallery who has agreed to introduce himself. So.
Well,